Good afternoon, everybody. I would like to start my presentation by acknowledging some collaborators in University of Guelph, Dr. Claudia Wagner-Riddle and then Shannon Brown that work in this project as well. There is several sites around the world that where CO2, water vapor, and energy flux are being measured continuously. So the last time that I updated the sites was in September, so a year ago, you had around 560 sites measuring these fluxes. You see here that you have a higher number of sites over North America and Europe, but you start seeing flux towers set up in other places, in different ecosystems. An interesting thing about this flux tower is that sometimes you require brave people to work there because you have to climb the towers to service the instruments. So you should not be afraid of height. You learned a lot of with these flux measurements, like in terms of what are the variables affecting seasonal change in fluxes of CO2, what droughts and other variables, how they affect the CO2 uptake by the vegetation and for the whole ecosystem. But you can learn more from these fluxes if you're able to separate the photosynthesis and the soil respiration. Because right now, what you measure in these flux sites is just the net CO2. So it's basically the combination of just two fluxes. And the reason why you can learn more about that is because CO2 uptake and CO2 respiration by the soil, they're very different processes. They're a function of different variables. So in order to model these processes, you should be, that are a function of different variables, you need to separate them. So there is different approaches that you can be used to separate the fluxes. Give some examples, soil chamber measurements. You can use night times flux measurements. So you assume that as there is no photosynthesis in the night time, all the flux is coming from the soil, and then you can use some empirical models to estimate the flux during the daytime. I'm gonna focus here on a new. Not new, but new because we're recently able to measure CO2 isotopes at the ecosystem scale. So one of the methodologies here that I'm going to present is to use stable isotopes of CO2 to separate these fluxes. So besides the flux separation at the ecosystem scale, the stable isotopes, they have been used for a very wide variety of applications. You can see a regional scale to investigate land use changes. On a global scale, there's some studies to study the magnitude of ocean and land fluxes and the contributions to the carbon cycle. So The isotope approach it's based on a mass balance method. So this is what you get in the flux towers. This is the net flux, and then if you have the signatures, so the isotope composition of these fluxes, you can by using you have a system with a linear system with two equations, two variables. So this FA and FR, that's what you wanted to find out. And then, if you find a way to determine the signatures of the fluxes, then you can use this approach to separate the contributions from plants and soil. So one of the isotopes that can be used to this is 13C CO2. You see here that there is some differences between soil and between different kind of plants. So C3 plants discriminate more heavily against the heavy isotope. So the signature of that of the plant tissue is going to have less 13 CO2 than in C4 plants. So if you have, for instance, corn growing over on soybean residue, then you're going to have a different signature coming from the soil and then from the plants. Okay, so if you find a way to determine these signatures, then you should be able to separate the fluxes. One thing that I have to mention here is that if this approach is based on the difference between the isotope composition of plants and soil, so if the difference is small, then you're not going to generate any new information in these equations, then you're not going to be able to separate the fluxes. So the objective here of this study was to study the temporal dynamics of the isotope composition of the net CO2 exchange above a corn canopy using high-frequency isotope measurements and meteorological techniques. So this study was carried out in southern Ontario in a corn field, a 3-hectare corn field. This cornfield has been going through this soybean and corn rotation for I think about 20 years now. And then you have a set of towers there that you carry out some micrometeorological measurements. So to measure the isotopes, you use a tunable diode laser spectroscopy technique. So this technique is different than the mass spectroscopy because you can actually have this the isotope composition of the air being measured continuously in the field, and it's based on the absorption of infrared radiation by the different isotopologues. So you see here that the lines, each of these individual absorptions line here, they're corresponding to a different molecule, okay? So here is the tunable diode laser. So the trace gas analyzer is connected to a manifold. And this manifold was used to switch between 8 intakes within the plant, the corn canopy. I'm sorry, 6 intakes within the corn canopy and 2 above the corn canopy. So the air was drawn continuously through these intakes, and when the valve was activated, then the flow was diverted to the analyzer. So you did a series of tests to determine how long it would take for this line to be purged, so you not have contamination of the concentration from a previous intake, and you determined that the time would be around 4 seconds. So you measured each intake for about 15 seconds, and then you had to take the first 4 seconds, you just eliminate this data. And then every 5 minutes, you use a set of primary calibration tanks to calibrate the analyzer. So it's very important the precision in the instruments because the difference in concentration that between the two isotopes are very small. And then once a week, you would use primary tanks to calibrate those secondary tanks. So we used you combined the concentration data that you got from the analyzer with and use a flux gradient approach to determine the isotopic ratio of the flux. Okay, so basically what you did is just you cancel out here the so this is a turbulent coefficient, it's called eddy diffusivity, and you assume that the eddy diffusivity is the same for both isotopes, meaning that there is no discrimination, so the turbulence is transport both isotopes equally. And then you get the ratio of the flux, that's what you're interested in. And then we take the ratio of the flux and then you convert in delta notation, that's a common notation for an isotope works. So we compare this method with the Killing plot method, that is a well-established method to determine isotope signatures, and then you found this a very good correlation between the two methods. The difference here is that with the Killing plot method, I only kept 27% of the data points during the interval that I was analyzed, and with the flux ratio method, I kept 95% of the data. So this is a seasonal trend of the isotope signatures. You see here that's quite noisy. You still have to do some screening for low wind speeds and directions that could affect these fluxes, the isotope composition, also the gradient. So if the gradient is quite small, you introduce more noise to the measurement. And then the next step is that we're trying to use a multi-layer approach. So you're only getting now with the isotope flux ratio the data above the canopy. But with a multi-layer approach, you should be able to get also data within the canopy and then from this lower layer here that you could assume that's coming from the soil. And this is the initial comparison between the flux ratio approach and the Lagrangian dispersion analysis. Still quite low, but the problem is what you saw is that the ability of our analyzer to measure small gradients. So in concluding, so the flux ratio method is suitable to estimate the isotope composition of CO2 flux. The Del13C of net CO2 flux showed a downward trend near the end of the growing season, which might be related to a reduction of autotrophic respiration in the soil. And Lagrangian dispersion analysis could be used to estimate the isotope signature of the soil and canopy flux, but additional work is still necessary to improve the parameterization turbulence within the canopy. Okay, so thank you for your questions.
We have time for some questions.
Okay, so prior to corn, you had soybeans growing this site, and we did some take some soil samples, and the isotope signature of the soil was about -32, so which indicates that C3 plants were growing that soil. So when you plant the corn and then you see the signature change because you have the plants transpiring and then you have CO2 coming from the plants.
Which was the range that you obtained between soybean or the previous signature and you implanted corn? What variation? Because it was so fast.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I was running out of time, but let's go back there. So, it's going about here, -12, -15, and then towards the end of the growing season, then you start seeing the signal close to what was the original signal from C3 plants.
Okay, thank you very much.